certified by the Department of Correction for a 412B on 411. That is, he's been certified to move to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. Before we begin, sir, Mr. Brown, would you give us your name and your agency number? Can you hear us okay, sir?
You broke up a little bit. My name is Ronald Bounds. My DOC number is 108514.
Thank you so very much, and welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Criminalists this morning. This morning, we do have three board members participating in your hearing, and they are the Honorable Mr. David Neal, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, and my name is C.T. Wright. I'm going to serve as your panel chair. And based on information that I do take note that I believe the last time that we spoke with you would have been back in August 17, 2017. And at that time, Mr. Johnson, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, and myself, we were a part of that hearing. However, this is the first time that Mr. Neal, the Honorable Mr. Neal, will have an opportunity to speak with you. So we just want to let you know that he is a board member who is not on the board when we had our last hearing. I would also just point out the fact that we do have one victim on the phone, and we will be trying to get back to your mother. I think she's still holding on, so we'll find her in just a few moments. And we have a number of individuals in the boardroom at this time. So what we want to do this morning, as you probably remember from the last time, we just want to talk with you, and I want to make just a few comments and follow my comments, then we will and comments or discussion by you and then the members of the board. Then we will talk to your supporters, and following speaking with your supporters, we will speak with victims or victims' advocates who might be present or on the phone today. Then we will give you an opportunity at the end to make a final statement to the board. And following that, the board will go into discussion as part of the open meeting laws of Arizona. And the board will make a determination whether to parole you to your next consecutive sentence of absolute discharge. Do you understand, sir?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, based on information that I have, and sometimes my information may be off just a little bit, therefore, feel free to correct any information that I might suggest at this time. Based on information that I have, you're currently serving one term for murder in the first degree, and that had its beginning back in November of 2000. It had its beginning back in October 19th of 1992. And you became parole eligible on October 19 in 2017. If you are paroled to your next consecutive sentence, then you will be paroled to murder first degree attempt to commit, and that would be a 16-year sentence there. Does that sound right so far, sir?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay, sir. I would also point out the fact that we do, and we can talk about that just a little later, we do have your progress report that's been presented to the board by the institution where you are housed at the moment, and for security reasons, we will not mention where you are housed, but we do have that report, and we want to thank the people there, the officers there, for providing us with that report. I also take note that based on information that we have from Owens and your information that you provided, your last discipline, I believe, would have been in 2000, and that would have been a conspiracy, and that would have been a major, but that was back in 2000. That was 18 years ago, almost 18 years ago, and just before then, the one that I showed was in March of 1999. That would have been assault with a weapon, and that would have been a major. Have you had any other disciplines or tickets since then, sir?
No, I have not. I believe you said something about an assault with a weapon. There is no infraction for any assault with a weapon.
No, you did not? Okay. Well, as I said, sometimes when I look at AIM, sometimes that information is incorrect. sometime we might miss, read it, let me see if I can find that, just to be on the safe side, sir. What we do show is, okay, not a weapon, but conspiracy, now I don't show a weapon, I don't know why I said a weapon, yes, I did say a weapon, yes. Assault with weapon, guilty, major, and that would have been March the 2nd, 1999, and if that information is correct, you might want at some point to check with names so that you can get it off of your record, but that does appear in the record, and until it is removed, it will be there, sir. So you know better than I do whether it was, whether that is correct information or not, but if that's incorrect information, you go through the process, work with your correction officer where you are housed, and make sure that you get that off of your record, sir. Okay, sir, we're not in a position to take it off ourselves, I just want to say that, but that information came to us by way of claims here in the state of Arizona. Okay, I also take note, sir, that this information may or may not be correct, but based on information that we have, you still have restitution. Have you paid the restitution as of this moment, sir?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? Have I paid the restitution?
Yes, sir.
Is that what you said?
Yes, sir. That's what I was asking. Yes, sir.
Well, right now, anytime I'm employed in a prison job, they do take monies out of my pay for crime victim compensation. So I'm assuming that's going towards my restitution.
Okay, sir. Well, we know that you have a large restitution. We know that while you're incarcerated, you won't be having that much money to be placed in restitution. Now, let me just ask a couple of other questions, sir. As you know, you won't be released today regardless of what the board does. Looking at the possibility of you moving to the next consecutive sentence, which means that you will not be released. You will still have some ways to go. But when you're released, I always like to sound positive. When you're released, what do you plan to do, sir? I mean, you don't need an answer today, but I'm just always curious. Have you thought about what might happen whenever that takes place, sir?
Yes, I thought about it. I think right now some of my concerns are with my family. My mother and father are getting older, and they do have health problems. If I was able to, my first priority would be to do what I can to help them and make life a little easier for them. As I said, I throughout my incarceration, I tried to take advantage of what programs that were available to me, vocational job programs. So I have the ability to and willingness to do anything that would keep me productive out in society. They do have a program here presently that it's what they call a beekeeper programming that I'm looking at, and I was thinking of something along that line. Maybe when I get out is something, a vocation I could get involved with.
Okay, sir. Well, that's a great idea. And in certain parts of the world, like where you are and here in the state of Arizona, there's a need for those who are in that profession, beekeeping, because bees are still alive and well. I'm here in Arizona, so that's a profession that one could really look at for the future. I just want to just take a moment for you to, let's just talk about the incident offense itself. According to the information that we have, and this is especially important for Mr. Neal, who was not here the last time, was not even on the board the last time that we met and talked with you, the incident offense itself, what we showed, I'm going to be very brief on this one because you and I and Mr. Johnson talked about it the last time. The offense took place back on September 29, 1992, when a female was murdered and a male victim was injured, and the female did die as a result of your attacking or shooting the female, and as a result of that, I believe that you, after the incident itself, you decided to withdraw some money from some of your accounts, including credit cards and some of your bank accounts, and you went to you ended up with your automobile, drove down to Florida, down to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and then took a flight to the U.S. Virgin Islands, and that's where you was arrested back on October 19, 1992. Is that information, I mean, I know that's just sketch information. Is that information right, or do you want to say anything else so that Mr. Neal might have a great understanding of what really happened, sir?
Well, I know you have to, you're summarizing what took place, and I hope you have the opportunity to review some of the packet that I sent you. I tried to present the narrative of Patty and I's life together and what occurred back during that time that would maybe give you a little more insight about what took place and when it took place. But generally, what you've had to say is, as far as a summary of what happened, occurred, the sequence of events of some of the things you said were a little out of order, but if it would help or assist you, I did have in my packet a narrative of, again, our lives together and what took place back during the week and the day of the crime I committed.
Well, would you be kind enough to share that just for, yes, we do have, just for your information, we do have your parole package. In fact, I'm looking at it right now, and all board members have had an opportunity to review it, but we'd just like to hear it from you, just to make sure that board members have an opportunity to, so would you maybe tell us what happened the week or a few weeks or in the day of the offense itself, sir?
Yes, I can. Just, I know you're pressed for time, but to summarize, Patty and I were involved in a relationship for a little more than 2 years. That relationship ended in April of 1992. I unfortunately didn't take it well. I went through some issues. I essentially broke down, and over a period of approximately 5 to 6 months, I tried to get myself back together. Unfortunately, I was having trouble doing so, but to get to the time frame when the crime occurred, about 4 days before the crime, I had in an attempt to get my life back together, I met with a prior employer of mine, Richard Tillman, about coming back to work there. It was on a Friday. We talked. I was working at Honeywell at the time. But because I was having difficulty, again, with the situation revolving around our relationship ending, I thought maybe a change of work might help me get through some of the problems I was having. I met with Richard. We were talking about, opportunities there coming back to work. As I said, I worked there before, and Richard knew Patty when I was working there before and happened to ask how she was doing. And I informed them that we were no longer together. Again, I'll try to speed this up. We talked more about the job after this. Our discussions concluded, and I told him I'd get back to him about maybe coming back to work. And unfortunately, when I left after the interview, I essentially had a breakdown. Instead of going to work that day at Honeywell, I ended up going home. Some of my problems, and again, I tried to highlight them or talk about them in that narrative I presented, was I had a habit of running away from my problems, and one way I did this was to gamble. And at that time, Friday, I went home with plans of just going to Vegas and gambling. That's where I went to my bank and withdrew some money with the plans of going. But by the time I tried to get myself ready to go, I just didn't seem to be able to get myself together, and I just sat on my couch the whole day. As the evening approached, I wasn't up for taking any trips at that point, so I decided to go see a movie, and the movie was Unforgiven, which had just recently come out at the time. After I saw the movie, unfortunately, I went to the grocery store and bought some groceries and alcohol, and I started to drink, and that's when things started to go downhill. That Saturday, I got up. I didn't really want to be in my home anymore. I wanted just to get away. There was a coupon book that I received through the mailers, I don't know when, but I went to it looking for something to do, and one of the coupons was to shoot at Shooter's World. So I just impulsively thought this is what I wanted to do. I didn't want to go alone, so I called my brother and asked if he would like to go. He went with me to Shooter's World, and we shot at a practice range there. Afterwards, I purchased a handgun. Later that day, again, I left my brother. I was still having problems getting myself together with the situation that I created in my head. I kind of came to this conclusion that at that time, that's all my life was going to amount to, that nothing was going to change, nothing was going to get better. And I had obviously a lot of anger at Patty, and I directed that a lot at Patty. And at that point, I decided I didn't want to live this way anymore. But I needed to get some answers from Patty. That was my belief at the time. And I figured the only way I could do this was to get her along in an isolated area. So I decided and went out and bought some camping gear, thinking maybe I'd take her with me. And again, it wasn't rational, but that's what I was going through at the time. So I went out and bought some camping gear, but I was struggling with the whole situation. I also, because I just had talked with Richard about maybe coming back to work with him, that I could just, you know, get my life together again. So I bought some dress clothes, thinking I could still do this. This doesn't have to happen. But it seemed like once I got home, I went back to drinking again. And it just got worse. Sunday, I again was still struggling with the problem. I went out again and bought some more camping gear, deciding again that this is what I had to do. At the store where I bought the camping gear, they had firearms in the same section. I saw a shotgun there. I bought the shotgun at the time I was buying camping gear, believing that this would be more intimidating, that Patty wouldn't make a resist if and when I confronted her. I went home afterwards. Again, it seems that I just struggled being at home alone, so I called my brother and asked him if he was wanting to go see a movie or something to do that afternoon or evening. He was busy doing something, but later that evening he did go with me to a movie. I didn't talk to him about what I was going through. I don't know why, but I guess I just was looking for some company. But after the movie, I dropped him off and went home again. And unfortunately, went down the same path and went back to drinking more. At this point, I called sometime Sunday evening. I called my place of work and told them that there'd been a death in the family, that I wouldn't be coming to work. And obviously that was a lie. Monday, I got up again. At this point, I was resolved to take Patty with me, that I was going to confront her. So Monday, well, I had a lot of things I was struggling with. I went to my bank again, made another withdrawal.
Can I get you to kind of sum it up?
Yeah, I knew this was, that's why I tried to present the narrative.
Let me acknowledge to you and to those present, we do have your parole package that you presented to the board. It's over 75 pages, almost 100 pages. Well, 75 pages have been numbered, and we've had an opportunity to review all of that. Now, just hold on one moment again. You and Ms. Shane, we're going to see if we can get your mother on the phone, sir. So just hold on.
All right.
She's taking it off of the hook because that was when we first started. Anybody have a cell number or anything for her? Do you have any other number aside from?
No, they don't have any
okay.
cell phone.
Okay.
She probably thinks you're still connected and she won't hang up.
We'll try again in a few moments. Okay, sir. So we're going to continue with what you're hearing because we definitely want to see if we can get your mother, because I know that she wanted to speak on your behalf. Okay, sir. But the long story short, after all of this, you did commit the offense itself, and the rest of it is history. But at this time, I'm going to, as it relates to the offense itself, I'm going to see if the other board members, because they've had an opportunity to review your parole package as well as the pre-sentence report, as well as information presented to the board by the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. So we've reviewed a whole lot of information. So any questions at this discussion that any board member wishes to make at this time? Honorable Mr. Johnson.
So that's, and then you did express what happened in that you were emotionally in a kind of a wreck when this happened. So what have you done since you've been incarcerated so that you could control that type of anger or emotion in that type of situation?
Well, over the years, I've tried to take the opportunity to get involved in any programs that I was allowed to participate in. Anger management courses. I've taken and participated in a project they have up here in Washington. It's called the Freedom Project. It's nonviolent alternatives. And I've also taken advantage in other programs, one called Making It Work. Another program that I recently completed was called the Redemption Project. And they all, to summarize on these courses, they all kind of deal with how I can better handle and face and deal with the emotions, especially the negative ones that led me to do what I did and can help prevent me from taking actions like that in the future.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Excuse me?
I just said thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Lee, do you have anything at this point that you want to ask or discuss?
Well, No, sir, I didn't.
Okay, well, thank you so very much. Following up on the question that University Johnson just asked you, what is a typical day like you today, sir? What do you do every day, and are you employed, or are you enrolled in any counseling or programs at this time, sir?
Yes, currently I'm employed in what they call it here, the correctional industry work program. I'm working in the food factory as a production clerk, mainly some of the jobs I've had throughout my incarceration because of my prior experience with computers allows me the opportunity to work in this field and help train other inmates and mentor, as well as develop programs that can make work a little easier. Also, as I said, I just completed the Redemption Project. It's a course that, again, dealt with how I could better deal and with issues related to what I did. And I've also, presently, I'm involved in what they call the Sustainability Practice Lab. What this is a project that allows inmates to get involved. Usually inmates that are in this program have to be infraction-free. They have to have completed other courses like the Redemption Project or the Freedom Project. And what we do with this in the practice lab is we have projects. One of them currently is to make blankets and quilts for the homeless in the Spokane area. It's for a program called Blessings Under the Bridge, where we take donated materials and repurpose them into blankets. We sew them together, and volunteers come in and collect the blankets so they can be distributed to the homeless.
And I should point out, sir, and I'm not cutting you off, but I certainly appreciate all that you're doing, and we do have a report from your employers up there where you were located, and they do point out the fact that you are doing an outstanding job in some of these community projects that you are involved in, and I just wanted to let you know that we are conscious of what you are involved in, and it's something that you can be very proud of that you're involved. But let me just ask another question. So I do take note, I believe, and if I'm incorrect, please correct me, that prior to your committing this offense, you had been in the U.S. Navy. And how did that work out for you? You ended up being honorable discharged, didn't you, sir?
Yes, I was in the Navy. I enlisted back in, I believe it was 1981, and I was as a reservist, and I completed my term, I think, in 1989, and was honorably discharged from the reserves, Naval Reserves.
Now, I'm jumping around this a little bit, but after you committed this offense, you went on to the U.S. Virgin Islands. Was that simply because you had that certificate, or was that somewhere where you were thinking about taking a vacation, or how did you select to go on there, sir?
Well, there was no, I believe in my mind, as I said, back when this crime was committed prior to it, I on and off been struggling through a period of months with a relationship ending, and had some problems again. I had a bad habit of going to Las Vegas to gamble, and in late August, I kind of decided I needed to break this pattern, that I needed to change something because nothing was getting better. At the time, I had started seeing someone casually and brought up, and the discussion was brought up about maybe taking a vacation. And an island getaway was brought up. We talked about it. And as far as going to the U.S. Virgin Islands, I think that was just when I got to Florida, that was just something I did. And maybe it was a result of what I was thinking back then. It was just, I just did it.
Let me just ask you one other question. So how did you get arrested down there in the U.S. Virgin Islands? How did they find you?
When I was in the Virgin Islands, I was there for maybe about 2 weeks, I believe. I just decided that I didn't want to be there anymore. Again, I had, even after this crime I committed, I was having problems. So I decided I was going to come back. And while I was checking in at the airline representative asked for my name, and I gave it to her. And obviously, something probably came up on the computer screen or what she was reading, that I probably had committed some crime. She asked me to wait for a minute and went up to an office. I suspected that something was there, so I followed her into the office and told her I believe I committed a crime. Okay. And that's where I was apprehended.
Okay, sir. I'm going to move on at this time. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Mr. Yes. Johnson, sir.
So I just wanted to, Mr. Bonds, when the police searched your house after this incident had occurred, and they found a note that you had read, and basically the note indicated that you only had one regret for what you had done, and that regret is that everyone was going to paint the victim's picture of this sweet and rising, hard-working woman that was destroyed by a man. You have no regret for what occurred, sir?
At the time I wrote that note, I obviously had a lot of anger in my heart, and I didn't, and that's how I expressed it. Every day I've had remorse for what has happened, what I've done. It's hard for me to express what I feel now. Obviously, I wish I could take back what I did, but I can't. But at that time, I didn't know how to cope with what I was going through, and instead of looking for help, I bottled it up, and obviously I pointed and blamed Patty for everything I was going through, which it wasn't Patty, it was me. I was the only person that was making me feel the way I was feeling, and that's something I have to live with for the rest of my life.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Well, we're going to move on at this time. Is there anyone present who wishes to speak on behalf of Mr. Brown? Any supporters? Any supporters? Any supporters? Okay, well, we're going to try again for your mother and see if we can get her, and if not, then we're going to move on, but we'll keep trying to reach your mother. We're going to try again.
Granted an end to his life sentence, as we do not get an end to ours. Life saw Patty 25 years and counting, and almost lost life for anyone else who may have been in the way that night. Ron took Patty's life, and this has so deeply affected all who love her and continues. No amount of years in prison would be enough, but at least it's justice. Though at the time of the murder, there is not the option of life without possibility of parole. And at the time, we did not seek the death penalty, nor do we want any vengeance for Ron, though that is what he gave Patty. I would like to know how rehabilitation can occur in prison when the murder was carefully and selfishly planned and horrifically carried out on Patty and Lauren. How is anyone safe from that rage and need to control another person? We know Ron is capable of this. His ability to cope with relationships that do not go his way has not been put to the test in the highly structured prison environment. How would there not be a similar outcome when faced with a similar situation? And it was not reassuring to have heard Ron in August go on and on about that day, buying clothes, etc., when he's killed someone and it was all a blur to him. Where is the accountability that could lead to a sincere change in behavior and heartfelt remorse? Though Patty began the relationship open and hopeful, she soon realized how destructive and abusive it was becoming and that she needed to leave. Patty did what she could to be honest and fair and protect herself. She sought counseling and suggested it could help Ron too, but he would not accept her right to her own life or seek help that was available. He terrorized and stalked Patty for a number of months before the murder. He purchased weapons and planned his escape. He methodically planned this murder, and then he wrote about it in his journal, and he blamed her for her fate. It is my thought that if Ron has truly searched his soul, he would stay in prison for the rest of his life for this crime against us all. He can do the things he said he would like to do on the outside from right there in prison, and own what he has done. He can be a voice to bring awareness to the madness of domestic violence and implore others who have not yet crossed the line to murder to not do as he has done. If Ron truly has compassion for our family, you can stop the process of us having to return to a place that still holds so much pain, including continuing to ask that someone spend their life in jail and have to relive that night year after year. And, you know, if it does continue, we respectfully request that it not be less than 1 year. So, in closing, this is not a mistake from which to learn and move on, nor was it an accident or even an impulsive emotional reaction to grief. This was a cold-blooded, calculated, premeditated murder of Patty. And though Lauren survived, thankfully, we must remember that the intent to kill was still there. This is a clear case of domestic violence at its worst. Lauren killed Patty because he could not control her or the circumstances, and he gravely injured Lauren. Lauren could make the rest of his life matter by getting help and helping others and being accountable for his actions. And please spare us from having to return to September 29th, 1992, ever again. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you so very much, Ms. Shane. Board members, any questions for Ms. Shane? None, but please feel free to stay on the phone, but we certainly appreciate that testimony coming from you this morning. Thanks again.
Yes, sir,
okay, thank you. Let's see who's present who wishes to come forward next. Yes, sir, please come forward, sir. And please state your name for the record, sir.
Good morning. My name is Douglas Peterson.
Good morning, sir.
Patty Peterson, our woman's brother.
Yes, sir.
And I would like to first thank the board for their time and listening to my statements today. I will start by saying my comments are very similar to my sister. And hand on my heart, we did actually write them independently of each other. And when we did speak, we said, yes, it is similar, but for good reason, for very good reason. Even after 25 years of the loss of our beautiful, fun-loving, precious Patty, it's something we'll never get over. We had to relive the whole thing just a few months ago, as we are today, listening to Ron Bowne's lament over his thoughts of what drove him to commit this terrible crime, and how sorry he was now. This, however, is not the key to freedom. He forfeited that when he pulled the triggers that day, and he needs to accept his fate. In addition to his debt to society, what about this propensity to succumb to these inner demons when he feels that things are not going his way? It's been demonstrated. Will mothers, fathers, family, friends of wonderful women feel safe if he gets next to or close to their daughters, sisters, or friends? Will my family ever feel safe from a vengeful individual who might say that we are taking his life by continuing to protest his release? His self-centered written thoughts from the diary prove that he is capable of premeditated vengeance, and when what is to stop him from doing these things again other than continued incarceration? And what of Lauren? The memory of those moments when Lauren was shot at his own home by Ron Bowne, and then to have to hear my sister, a woman who Lauren loved dearly, scream when she was being brutally murdered by Ron Bowne as she sat helplessly in her car. All of this in the escape to the Virgin Islands was done in such a sickening and horrifically premeditated way. Those memories can never be erased in Lauren's mind or in that of his family. This was a capital crime, and perhaps it should have gone that way. Anyone who committed, had a record of, and confessed to these horrific crimes cannot be allowed back into society. Ron Bowne's cried about his remorse and thinks that it's now a good excuse to admit him back into society, but the family and friends of Patty say no. No. If he is remorseful, he will accept his place in prison and for the rest of his life and not put the family and friends of Patty through this torment each year or whatever again. We will appear at these hearings if they take place. We will take our personal time, expense, and mental anguish to protest the release. In fact, by continuing to seek parole, I take it as his prolonged deliberate attempt to continue to bring pain and suffering to all of us who lost our beautiful family. If he is indeed remorseful, he will never attend parole hearing again, and he will instead use his remorse to help others who may not be too late by showing them what their lives have to look forward to if they murder. Perhaps he may say he will do this on the outside and commit to it, but in our minds, no good. The message has to be sent from someone who is on the inside, not on the outside, who accepts no possibility of ever being free again. Gone is that life of freedom, along with the life he so honestly took away from those of us who loved Patty. We respectfully request the board to deny parole and to not allow another hearing for the maximum time allowable by law. I'd like to thank the board again for listening to my comments, and if I may, I would like to leave a copy of my comments for the permanent file.
Thank you so very much, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you very much. They will be part of the file. Thank you so very much. Any questions at this house? Questions, board members? We don't have any, but thank you for making your testimony today. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the Arizona Board of Health and Policy, and please state your name for the record. Thank you, sir, and welcome.
I just, it means so much to me to be here today to speak, and I sincerely appreciate your time, and I will quickly read my statement and then provide it for the record. Patty was such a wonderful person who was very excited about the future. I still miss her very much and think of her often. We fell in love and looked forward to having a wonderful life together. We were so in love with each other, but what also made it so wonderful was that my young daughters also loved her, and she loved them. They were always so excited to see Patty, and Patty loved having them in her life. The very painful sadness my young daughter shared in writing after Patty was murdered is still so heartbreaking to read. Patty had such a loving heart. She was so kind, so quick to smile and laugh, and made you feel at ease. Of course, I'm saying this because I loved her so much. So I'll share with you what she meant to the University of Phoenix, where she worked. The university established the Patty Hardman Memorial Scholarship. I'll read just four sentences from the scholarship about Patty. Patty Hardman, a University of Phoenix academic counselor, will be greatly missed by all students, alumni, faculty, and staff. Patty's sunny smile and vivacious personality brought happiness, optimism, and enjoyment to all who worked with her. She was especially proud of her recent graduation from the Bachelor of Arts and Management program, and took special delight in helping others also achieve their dreams. We have lost a dear friend and colleague. I want to compare that with what Ron Bounds wrote about Patty. This is 3 weeks after he killed her. This was the last thing he wrote right before he was captured in the U.S. Virgin Islands. So here's an opportunity to know his final thoughts 3 weeks later while he's still a free man. I knew then that all along deep down, Patty was really never in a relationship with me, that I was there to help her heal from her marriage. Too bad she didn't tell me this from the beginning. She might still be alive today if she did. So don't any of you believe for a minute that she was just an innocent victim. There's no effing such thing. And for those of you who that believe that I was solely responsible for what happened, friends of Patty, her family, well, it still doesn't bring her back, does it? What he said is so heartless and so extremely disturbing. His final threatening thoughts, right before being captured, and this is after weeks on a beach to think about it, are that Patty is guilty of not being honest with him, so she deserved to be murdered, and then saying he might have allowed Patty to live if she told him that he was helping her heal after divorce. And I know it's not important here, but I want you to know that what Ron said is such a disgusting, despicable lie. She became so terrified of who and what Ron Bounds truly is. Patty became so afraid of his behavior and things he said about her and other people. She realized there was absolutely nothing she could ever do to stop him from getting so angry over the most trivial things, and that she would never be able to stop him from getting so angry when she disagreed with him. He kept saying it was always her fault. She needed to stop doing things that made him so angry. Just ending the relationship became a nightmare for Patty because Ron thought that breaking up with him was not her decision to make. Patty told me after we had just a couple dates that she was having a serious problem with an ex-boyfriend and not leaving her alone. She said she was getting very scared and wanted me to know about it. Patty and I thought the harassment would stop once Ron saw that she was dating someone else, but the harassment got worse, to the point that she got an injunction against harassment. But obviously even that didn't stop it. She cried so hard sometimes because she felt completely helpless. I tried to console her, but I also felt so helpless. All we could do was hope he'd stop it. After Patty was murdered, I became involved in organizations to help women and children escape this type of violence. I served many years on the Governor's Commission to Prevent Violence Against Women. I also served many years on the Board of Sojourner Center. It's a shelter and transitional program for women and children who are victims of domestic violence. I've seen so many victims and I've heard so many tragic stories, including stories I've heard of those women and children eventually being murdered after suffering from years of domestic violence by the abuser. Some murders have been committed even after the abuser served time in jail or prison for domestic violence. Just like Ron Bounds, some abusers end up murdering their victims when they think they've lost control of them. This isn't simply about anger or depression, which is what Ron Bounds wants us to believe. This is about the need for absolute power and control over a human being. I think people dealing with depression would strongly disagree and be quite offended by the strong correlation Ron is trying to make between depression and the ability to carefully plan to commit murder and plan to escape by using three cars parked miles away from each other. How did that happen? And then go to the U.S. Virgin Islands. I cannot believe that it was just depression that made Ron Bounds have complete disregard for the sanctity of human life. We know that Ron Bounds is capable of murdering a woman when he loses control of her. We also know that Ron is going to murder someone he doesn't even know, just for becoming involved with the woman that he lost control of. He decided to commit this murder at my house. He didn't care that my two very young brothers might be there. He didn't care. They might run into the clutch to greet Patty at the moment of his first shot. Patty ran into the clutch to greet Patty. A lot of buckshot was in the door that they would have been running out of. He didn't care that I had children who loved me and had wanted me in their life. It's so extremely disturbing to think about everything he did leading up to killing Patty. He could easily still be capable of killing another woman who tries to control that, but then loses control of her. For the months of terrifying Patty before killing her, for never deciding to seek help instead of killing her, and for all the time and effort Ron Bounds devoted to planning the most premeditated murder that four police officers ever investigated in their entire careers in law enforcement, I respectfully ask that you please deny parole. All four police officers, Andy, Joe, Jim, Mark, submitted written statements. They were the primary investigators in this crime. Based on their statements, Ron Bounds must be among those committing the most premeditated murders in Arizona. Please don't give him the ability to kill again. Please don't take the risk of endangering anyone else's life at the hands of Ron Bounds and enabling him to cause even more unbearable grief than he has already caused. The risk in releasing you back into society is too much to accept. If you're not fully convinced that Ron Bounds will not hurt or murder anyone else if he's released, then please deny parole. There are so many victims of the very painful sadness caused by Ron Bounds and this horrible crime. We would love to have Pat in our lives today. We're begging you to please deny parole to Ron Bounds, and I respectfully request that you do not allow another hearing for at least 1 year. Thank you for the opportunity to let you know how we feel about this.
Thank you so very much. Any questions?
No question.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And this will be made a part of the permanent record, sir. Thank you so very much for your testimony. Would an attorney please state your name for the record, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Matthew Elias. I'm the Deputy County Attorney with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office.
Thanks for being here, Mr. Elias. And Mr. Attorney, you're prepared for your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I received a note from Ms. Mooney that Ron Bounds owes $92,543 in restitution. So far, over the last time during his incarceration, he has paid $755.33. Additionally, the victims haven't received payments for many years. When inmates are out of state, they are not part of the Arizona Inmate Banking Restitution Process, and that system is not set up to pull money from out-of-state inmates. The only way for the victims to receive restitution is for Mr. Bounds to pay the Arizona clerk of the court directly. So I want to provide that for the court.
Thanks for putting that on the record, sir. And thanks, Ms. Moody.
The Maricopa County Attorney's Office submitted a letter in this case. I'm not going to rehash all the points that were made in that. This circumstance, and to just add on to some of the prior statements made by the other victims' representatives present, this is a circumstance of domestic violence being solely about power control. Mr. Bounds, in his statement and his explanation, even today, even 25 years later, even having the opportunity to spend that amount of time incarcerated, is not fully accepting responsibility for his actions in this matter. He is not fully remorseful for what he did to Patty and to my friends. He is blaming it on depression and almost lamenting that this happened to him. And his statements that he made at that time in his diary and in the note that police found at his residence really are insightful to what his psyche truly was at this time. It was about power and control. When Patty broke up with Mr. Bounds, she saw an injunction against harassment against him. He contested that at the hearing because he was losing control over her. Not just because she had broken up with him and he continued to harass her, but then also in applying for an injunction against harassment, he was losing even more control. He contested that at the hearing, he lost. But unfortunately, he didn't learn his lesson at that point, and that didn't stop him, and that didn't stop the cycle of violence in this unfortunate situation. He continued to harass her, rising to a point where he became so angry at her that he planned out this cruel and calculated murder. It was deliberately planned, it was premeditated, it was cold and calculated. And based on the nature of the offense, based on the alleged escape attempt, based on his lack of remorse even at this point, based on the statements that he made in the writing that was found at his residence and in his later diary, basically blaming Patty for causing Mr. Bounds' murder. That is what this boils down to. He is not, even at this point, fully accepting responsibility. He is lamenting that Patty caused him to murder. The domestic violence cycle of violence is tragic, and in this case, Mr. Bounds fully does not accept the responsibility that he did this on his own. And for those reasons, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office objects to any release of Mr. Bounds and also objects to paroling him to his next consecutive sentence and requests that the board provide a one-year set-off for the next hearing. Are there any questions?
Questions? Board members? Thank you so very much for your testimony, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Anyone else wishes to speak at this time? Any more victims? Any more victims? I don't hear any more. Mr. Bounds, we're coming to the end of your hearing, but we do want to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. We're going to ask you to sum it up for time consideration. But what else do you want to tell the board without repeating yourself before the board goes into discussion and makes its decision at this time, sir? So, Mr. Bowers, we're prepared to listen to your final testimony for today.
Well, I'd just like to say I'm never going to be able to atone for taking Patty's life. What I've done will always be with me, as I know her absence will always be felt by her family. But I still try to live my life by doing what's right and to become something better. Before I did this terrible thing, I lived a life believing I was considerate and helpful to others, working hard to make a better life for those I cared for and loved and myself, and ultimately trying to do the right thing. But then I found myself in a situation that I created that I couldn't overcome. And I broke in the worst way, and I did the unthinkable. I ended Patty's dreams of life well short of what it should have been. I can't undo what I've done, but I can work to be better and help others in the process. The crime I committed doesn't have to define who I am now. We all possess the ability to be better, even when we do horrible things. And I can still come back a better part of myself and who I know I can be. I'd just like to thank you for taking the time to listen and consider what I have to say.
Thank you so very much, sir, and we appreciate your coming before the board today to provide your testimony. There's nothing else that we're not prepared to go into discussion. I would just like to say for the record again, and I'm not going to attempt again at this time, but we sincerely apologize to Mr. Bounds' mother, I believe her first name was Gloria, but being unable to contact her. What we've tried, I think, over the present, and I think the records would reflect that we tried at least five times again to contact her, and the technology just did not make it happen. I just want to put that on record in case someone should ask that question. We're now going to discussion. We're going to ask everyone to remain quiet. Mr. Bounds, please stay on the phone, because this is the open meeting law. And Ms. Shane, please feel free to stay on the phone as well. The board will now go into discussion. This is a very tragic situation. First of all, let me just say that, to be sure, Mr. Bounds has made some progress over the years. He's not the same person that he was. However, as a board member, as one board member, I have to take into consideration, despite successes that he's made, what we have heard, what we read about the crime itself. I also have to take into consideration, as one board member, the victims that were involved. This situation was very, very, very unfortunate. I don't feel that there's a way to justify it. I think that we never know from deep in inside whether one is remorse or not. But I think that when we have situations like this, just as one board member, we almost take everything into consideration. And in view of that, as one board member, I do not feel that at this time that Mr. Bounds should be paroled to his initial suffering sentence or offered absolute discharge, and that he should receive a 1-year set off. But I'm only speaking as one board member. Other board members, it's open up for your discussion. On the way, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, I agree with you. The totality of I was around quite a few domestic violence cases that escalated to some very serious injuries, but very seldom was there a homicide. But the ones that were, most part of them were spur of the moment, they weren't planned out. This one was with a lot of effort and energy planning and placing the cars and everything else, and I truly at this time, not really hearing it, wouldn't let the remorse that I would expect to hear in Mr. Bounds. So at this time, I'm not sure that we would need to make consecutive law to discharge.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Mayor. Honorable Mr. Johnson.
That's right. I'm going to agree with my colleagues. I do think it is in the best interest of the safety of the community to keep Mr. Bonds incarcerated. It's a very heinous and planned murder of the victims in this instance. So I'm not in support of Mr. Bonds being moved to his next consecutive sentence. So we're at an absolute discharge and not to support a 1-year setup.
Thank you so very much, sir. At this time, I'm going to offer my time and see where it goes. My motion is going to be to deny Mr. Manjay Bounds, DOC number 108514, to deny him parole to his next consecutive sentence, an absolute discharge with a 1-year set off since this crime took place in 1993, he would qualify for a 1-year set off. And then I'll give the reasons if the motion carries. That is my motion.
Second.
All right. Motion by myself, C.T. Wright, seconded by Mr. Neal. Agreed by Mr. Johnson, by the unanimous determination of the board to parole to the next consecutive sentence of absolute discharge of 1 year. This will be a 1-year set off. The reason for the now will include serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victims, plural, serious bodily injury, multi-victims, and at the time of the offense itself, victims harassment as much as there was harassment. It's not appropriate at this time for a release plan, but we did discuss that possibility, but that is not appropriate at this time. He was continuing, as much as he's not in the state of Arizona, he's continuing to participate in programs and employment where he's housed at this particular time. Is there anything else that any board member wishes not included to the reasonable deadline. No cure for disease at this time. Mr. Bounds, hopefully you heard that the board has denied your promotion to the National Security Center for absolute discharge. You have a 1 year sentence, and you have that about a year from now, you will be certified by the Department of Corrections to appear before this board again. And you will be placed on the calendar of the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency at that time. I also stated reasons for denial. Do I need to repeat anything else at this time, sir?
No, I heard everything. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so very much. Please have a great day, and thanks so much for participating in the hearing. And the hearing is open. Thank you. Thanks so much, Ms. Shane, for
thank
your
you
participation
very much.
As well. And we're going to disconnect with the phone at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
And the board will take a 5 minute recess at this time. Thanks to all of you for coming and participating.